The terrible bushfires this year, the summer of 2020, brought the Port Macquarie Koala Hospital into the news. Shane Flanagan is the clinical director of the hospital and a trained wildlife biologist. We talked about what it's like to try to save koalas from the worst injuries, burns, smoke, disease, and road accidents. Shane has some real suggestions on what you can do to help.
My name is Shane Flanagan, the clinical director of the Port Macquarie Koala Hospital, and I've been working with koalas here for over 20 years and worked with koalas prior to coming here. And they're just a really lovely species to work with. They're, they're a mix of very feisty through to very gentle. Some of them are just like Buddhas.
Fantastic.
Yeah, very chilled. Yeah.
Excellent. So how did you train to do the job that you're doing?
Well, I'm a wildlife biologist, which is what I was before I came here. There was a job advertised and, just into the job I slotted and away it went. So, yeah.
Excellent. And so whereabouts do you work? And if you could describe for students what the location and what the workplace is like in a typical day.
The Koala Hospital's located 4 hours north of Sydney, right on the coast. You can literally hear the ocean from here sometimes. It's very close. And it's in a lovely bush setting in the middle of Port Macquarie. We admit and treat all the wild koalas that come through our doors, with everything from being hit by cars to attacked by dogs to disease to loss of habitat. And the daily thing here is literally the koala patients come in, we examine them, we do what we need to do with them, and then we start treating them. So it's all about holding the koalas, handling them, anaesthetising them, doing all the things we need to do to them. And once all the work's done with the koalas, it's lots of paperwork.
What kind of paperwork do you need to do?
Every bit of information on each koala is recorded. We have a full database on everything to do with the animal. And that database, we've got 47 years worth of data, so it's probably the oldest database in the country of information on everything from pathology right through to, well, you name it, it's on there. We also do a lot of training. We teach throughout the country. We do a lot of research and yep. We work a lot with government agencies. So, yes, the day is always full.
I don't doubt it. I'm sure you often have your hands full. I have lots of questions I'd love to ask you, but what I'd like to start with is just to ask your perceptions of why people are interested in koalas.
I think all of us, when we were little children, we all had a funny toy that we really liked, and a lot of us had teddy bears, and an adult koala just sitting there actually has an appearance looking like a teddy bear, and also they're about the size of about an 18-month-old human toddler sitting there. So it sort of really engenders the warm and fuzzies in everybody when they see a koala. Not that you could go up and pick it up and squeeze it like you could a teddy. The koala would probably kill you if you tried to do that. But I think that's what drives it. And because also they're what we'd call a pretty innocuous species. They're not going to attack you. They have no poison. There's just nothing about them that's nasty. Yes, there's the myth of the drop bear. And yes, koalas have indeed jumped out of trees and landed on people. But that's more accidental rather than deliberate. So they're not a species that would want to harm anyone. They would much prefer to just chill and go to sleep than do anything nasty. So they're
fantastic.
Just a peaceful animal. There's a special way you handle wild animals. You've got to treat them as a wild animal. So every bit of handling that's done with them is done very carefully. And everything we do is done to minimise. Stress is a big word, and it's a word we don't really like using, but we do everything as a minimum, so we're very non-threatening to them, or as non-threatening as we can possibly be. So all our handling is done without them actually knowing we're touching them, because we use capture bags and we have these methods of working with them that's very quiet and careful. Plus, we do put them under an anaesthetic, which makes dealing with them so much better, and they respond very well to anaesthesia. And so, therefore, it's all done and dusted before they even wake up. So, for us, we respect the fact they're a wild animal, and we want to keep them as wild animals. And we're completely and utterly against patting and cuddling and squashing koalas because they're wild and that's they just don't like it. They don't like being touched at all.
From your experience, what is the biggest threat to koalas?
People. Simple as that. The human race is a threat to all wildlife in Australia, worldwide. Every issue that goes on with wildlife anywhere is because of humans. No other question. I can't be more blunt than that, but that's a fact. We can't gloss it over. The while we continually breed and increase our populations, and while we continually build infrastructure to suit us humans, we are moving more and more into encroaching on wildlife habitat. And the COVID virus is a classic example of where us interfering with nature is coming back to bite us. So all the issues that happen with koalas happen because we remove their habitat. That's what drives it all.
Okay, great. So if there's one thing you could do to help the koala, what would it be?
For people, the most important thing they can do is to acknowledge that we're removing their habitat and that we must reverse this. We really don't need to have so much acreage, and we really, you know, we need to change the way we build our homes. We need to conserve forest, and what's left there now must stay there, and we need to increase it and rehabilitate degraded habitat, because what would be a world without koalas? You know, you think about it. We can all live in concrete jungles, but what would be a world without wildlife? We must have them. The wildlife are there. Well, they're important, but you know, it's part of who we are, and therefore we must learn to adjust.
Yeah, I'd really agree with that. That if we don't have wildlife, if we don't have wild spaces, then we're not really ourselves anymore.
That's right.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. I grew up in the Canadian forest, and I can't really see any way without wildlife. If you wanted to ask students, if you wanted to challenge students to do something in their own local or in their school areas, what sorts of things could students do that are very concrete?
One very big thing, and it's going to make a lot of students go, no, is we are so reliant on technology, and we are so reliant on technology doing everything for us. I would like to see students learn to go back to basics. Since this COVID thing has really done some good things, it's made people aware that we need to grow our own food. And, you know, nurseries right across the country are discovering this, that they're all sold out. So we need to be less reliant on technology. We need to grow more food, plant more trees. And this is something that everybody can learn to do, is not be such big consumers, but learn to make your own and learn to grow your own. And all of that will reduce carbon emissions and reduce the need for removal of so many forests. We have to change the way we live. We really do.
Yeah, I agree. And many of the students will want to be change makers in terms of being advocates, and others will want to do something practical or hands-on. Is there anything you'd like to say about this summer and about the work of the Port Macquarie Koala Hospital after the bushfires and during the bushfires this summer, or is that topic you'd rather not go through?
No, happy. I mean, we were all seen all over the world when it was all happening, so.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about this summer then.
Well, before the summer was the drought, and you know, this is a drought, the longest drought in recorded history, because it plays a major role in what has happened with the fires. As conditions became drier and hotter, the animals that were living in these environments were really starting to suffer from major chronic dehydration. And one of the things that affects animals when they have chronic dehydration is it sends them into renal failure. The kidneys don't cope. And so we already had all these animals all over the country, not only just koalas, but other species as well, but particularly koalas, who were already suffering from the effects of drought. Bear in mind that koalas get the vast majority of their daily moisture needs from the eucalypt leaf. So if trees are already under stress from drought, they're not getting the moisture needs that are important to them. And therefore, they're already in a very poor state before the fires hit. And then the fires hit, and in a lot of cases, well, so many were wiped out, it's just not funny. I mean, we potentially have lost thousands of koalas. But those that did survive came into care with dehydration issues and burns. And in a lot of cases, it was just too much for them. You know, we had people say, why couldn't you have saved this one or that one? These animals were already severely compromised from drought. And then the fires were just too much. So it was a major battle to keep a lot of these animals alive. And also, depending on the level of burns, if the burns are really bad, we are not going to subject that animal to a lifetime of pain. Anyone working with human burns patients will tell you that they have a lifetime of pain and lots of surgeries. We're not going to do that to a wild animal. They wouldn't cope anyway. But for us, we only treat burns where an animal has a chance of good recovery and a return to the wild. Because if they can't, we're not going to hold them here permanently, disfigured and in pain for their whole lives. So we had to make some pretty awful decisions. And especially knowing these animals were in dire straits anyway and the numbers were declining so badly. So have to put down animals because you knew they didn't have a future. It was just really hard when koalas were already struggling.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying too, that they need to be wild animals and be able to be wild animals for the rest of their natural lifespan.
Yep, yep. And, you know, no matter how much we can offer them, you know, beautiful fresh leaf and lovely cozy accommodation, you know, a lot of them still die because they don't cope with being in captivity. I mean, they sit there very quietly looking like they're okay when in actual fact they're really suffering. So, and when you work with these animals for a long time, you get to know what's okay and what's not. And so, yeah, we had to make decisions. But at the same time, when all this was going on, we are funded by the public visitation here. You know, they come here to see the hospital. And during the month of November last year, which is normally a very quiet month, we had 50,000 members of the public came here because they were so concerned that they'd never see the koala again and they wanted to come and help. Plus, we had incredible support from all over the world. The stuff that we're still getting stuff sent to us, still, after all this time. And the outpouring of support from people all over the world saying that they just couldn't bear a world without a koala. You know, here's something to help you. It was just gobsmacking. So
that's really good.
It was really, it helped us through the horrible part, knowing that we had the support worldwide from people. And, it, you know, that was really heartening to know that people care. They really care.
But it keeps you going, doesn't it?
It keeps you going. But meanwhile, it's very hard. The things still go on. We have released pretty well all the koalas that we knew would be released. They've all gone now, so we've put them back because we've had really good rain, which is a bit of an irony, but you know, perfect. And all the koalas now have gone back to their home ranges. But the hard thing is because so many of their cohort, so many in their population perished in the fires, it's sort of like 2/3 of a town was wiped out. And all that's left is a few residents of the town. And that's exactly what's happened with these populations. So when we put these animals back, it was very difficult because we always put them back to the tree they came from. But because if we put one koala back at the tree he came from and then another one a kilometre away, they wouldn't know that there's another koala there because they have to call to each other. They might live by themselves, but they're also very social. They have to know that the rest of the population's around. So we had to basically reconstruct populations with what we had left, and we put them how they would have been, as in male to female ratios. So we basically created new towns, you know, new populations when we put them back.
So there's an ongoing task there too, which I'm hearing behind what you're saying, which is to help maintain ongoing genetic diversity and ongoing breeding populations so that we can repopulate the koalas.
Well, that's what the amount of GoFundMe money that we received is going to build a very big koala breeding facility and research centre. And with that, we hope to breed what we have kept here and a few others we will probably bring in. And we're going to breed and hopefully repopulate a lot of these sites. But there's no point in repopulating these sites if we continue to have hotter, drier conditions over the next X amount of years, because we will revisit these fires again. And so it's a bit of a fine line we walk on, but we need to change carbon emissions so that we don't have these heat events. And this is what I'm talking about, how we need to change how we function with technology, because the more technology we have, the more we consume, the more CO2 emissions happen. So, yeah, I mean, there's a whole lot involved in this, of course. So to breed and repopulate, we want to do it with the security of knowing that we're not going to have these major fire events again. And unfortunately, I think we will. We will be buying land where we can protect them to some degree. We'll be able to keep X amount in protected land. But, you know, that's not going to, you know, if we've lost potentially up to 8,000 koalas in New South Wales, for us, that's going to take 50 years to achieve that amount of animals. Maybe.
And I think if you were to ask whether or not we could go for 50 years without a bushfire, I think everybody would have a pretty negative response to that. And you're right, that's the point, is that climate change and bushfires are linked, and so we need to work on climate change as well.
That's it. That's the track we've got to go up, you know, not only for wildlife, for us.
Yeah, one of the other interviewees said, if we can't save the koala, we can't save ourselves.
That's about right. I mean, the koala has become the flagship species for this country because, you know, as you've just said, if we can't save them, well, what hope have we got? And it's also, there's a number of other species that live in association with koalas. There's two species that come to mind straight away that are quietly sliding into extinction, but nobody talks about them. And one is the greater glider and the other is the yellow-bellied glider. And both of them are arboreal species as well, and they live in the same habitat as koala. So they're going extinct right now. So we're hoping to become involved in a breeding program with them as well at some point in the future. But there's thousands of other species that live in the same environment as koalas. I'd really like to say to all the children out there that you are the wildlife warriors of the future. And I know it's a big thing to put on you and it's a big pressure, but we have great hope in children of today, you know, and the passion with people and the children. And we would like to encourage as many as possible to go into the science field, into the veterinary field and into the wildlife field, because, you know, you are the saving grace for us. And, please go up the science track.
This interview is part of the Koala Smart Program, an initiative of Lions Club Tacking Point, funded by the New South Wales Department of Planning, Industry and the Environment. You can get all the Koala Smart resources and activities at koalasmart.org.au.